to Diverse Voices in Educational Practice, a mini-series for the Agents of Hope podcast, with me, your host, Dr. Alexandra Saul. In this series, I interview a variety of contributors from my book, also called Diverse Voices in Educational Practice, who share their exciting work promoting meaningful voice practices in education. Our collective aim is to inspire you to develop your own meaningful voice practices. We hope you enjoy the podcast. My guests today are Naomi Boswell and Erica Douglas Osborne. Naomi is an educational and child psychologist within a local authority in Northwest England. Naomi is also an honorary tutor at the University of Manchester and has published research in co-production and participation. Erica Douglas Osborne is a senior specialist child and educational psychologist within a local authority in Greater Manchester. Erica is also an honorary tutor at Manchester University and a published author. Welcome both of you to the podcast. If you could start by outlining your professional backgrounds, please.
Strangely enough, Ali, I have been on this podcast before. So some people may have listened to my previous episode, and I did talk a little bit about my background on there. But for those new listeners, I have worked primarily with children with autism when I first began my career after my psychology degree, in an independent setting in a variety of roles. Supporting kind of therapeutic intervention, access to learning, and within care as well. I have done a little bit of work within clinical psychology, and also supporting in a teaching assistant role within schools. So quite a varied background that then led me to the role of an assistant EP before training to be an EP. And I'm now in my newly qualified year, although it's fast running out.
Great. And you mentioned there you've been on the podcast before, so you previously spoke about the research that we're going to talk about today.
Yes. And
update us.
Yes. So I think when I spoke with Tim in the first episode I did, I was very much at the beginning of the research with Erica, and I spoke alone. But it's nice that we are together today and we can give you a bit of an update about what's come out of the research, what we've done, I suppose, with the findings of the research to try and make it more accessible to a wider audience. And then what Erica has continued to do following that research within her role.
Brilliant. Really looking forward to hearing that. And that segued nicely into introducing Erica. So Erica, if you'd like to give us a little bit about your professional background as well.
Hi, I'm Erica. And my area is early years, but I think it really links with what we're talking about around co-production, because it's all very similar about how we get those views and how it's important. First thing, I know we talked before about challenging, just in terms of the language, because I noticed, Ali, when you said about your professional background, one of the things that we've really picked up on when working with children and young people is not to use terms such as that can create hierarchy and a power imbalance. So I quite often talk about my practitioner background or I've been as a practitioner. So I guess beforehand, I initially worked as a residential support worker. I used to work in dementia care. I nearly didn't complete my undergraduate because I loved it. And what I loved about it was getting to know what's important to people. And I always thought my time as a residential support worker was about what do they want. And I think that's something that both for Naomi and I has really come through in our practice and ever since. So I guess even as my assistant roles before getting on the course and since being an EP, I'm always going down a rabbit hole, I'd probably call it, in terms of my experience and thinking about how are we really listening and how does that influence and impact how we practice. So yeah, I guess in terms of, I've done lots of different things in my background in terms of early years, working in specialist provisions, to dementia care, which I think that has a lot of overlaps with how we work now about changing systems around children and young people. But yeah, very much co-production and participation and listening to and acting upon is something, a thread that's, I think, really come through my being a practitioner, really.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I haven't even considered the word professional before, which goes to show how ingrained it is. Okay, so you have both spoken a little bit about your research project around co-production there. So let's start with that. Could you tell us a little bit more about your contribution to the book then, and the purpose and outcome of your research?
Yes, so I, whilst I was doing the doctoral training, as part of the research commissioning, Erica had the idea to further explore co-production. And luckily for me, I got to work with Erica, and I too had this, I was drawn to the topic because I had worked particularly with children who we may describe as non-verbal or who don't communicate verbally. And I had noticed particularly kind of a disparity between their views being considered because they don't use words. And I thought it was interesting, this idea of participation and how we work and co-produce with children and young people and give them a platform to be able to make decisions. And so we looked at how we could develop practice in that area. And after many a conversation between Erica and I, we came to the conclusion that as EPs, we work a lot with children and young people, and we ask their views, if you will, as part of developing outcomes or looking at what support they need. But we don't ask them or get them involved in how we work or how we practice. And so we kind of don't practice what we preach. We tell schools and we say, you should be getting children involved in target setting and asking what they want to do in the future, and we do all of these things, but actually we then sometimes will book an appointment to go and see a child on a date and a time that's convenient for us, and we will bring them out of class and they're expected that they should talk to us and that they should engage with that, and that's seen as a positive if they do, and they're not usually informed to make that decision. And so there was lots of these kind of discussions that led us to think that it would be helpful to review EP practice, and there was an opportunity to develop a service in line with what children and young people wanted, because the service kind of was starting from scratch. It had been dissolved, so it was a new opportunity, a blank slate to start from the beginning. So Eric and I worked over a series of months trying to get as vast amount of opinions, views on how children and young people wanted to work with us. But that was the first, I suppose, mission, if you will. Are they interested? do they want to have a conversation about EP services? And luckily for us, they did. And so we worked with a primary school, secondary schools, we worked with a youth council, so we tried to get a variety of views, and they gave us lots and lots of ideas about how we should work, and then luckily for us, they chose that they wanted to be involved in sharing those views back with the EP service and being part of kind of putting those actions into place and reviewing them. So that led to that co-production over the course of a year, in which Erica's service took on board those views and really developed their service and have continued to have that relationship with children and young people over the years since then. So Erica, I've probably not perhaps done justice to the amount of work we've done, but or that you've continued to do. But is there anything you think I've missed from that?
No, I think you've said that really eloquently. I think particularly when I did the research commissioning that Naomi took up, I, in my previous local authority, whereas I was a specialist on in participation and co-production, and I was doing lots of local authority systemic work about developing our local authority co-production strategy and all these things. And it was like, it was very hard work getting stakeholders, getting people to think about changing practice. And, you know, through conversations with Naomi, we're thinking we need to start this at home. We need to look at our own practice right now. What are we doing as EPs? How can we think about changing and working with and listening to? And if we start to do that, that's when maybe later down the line we can think about local authority practices and introducing stuff. So it was a different way of doing it, but I definitely think this has been more successful because now when I'm more involved at a strategic level talking about what we're doing as a local authority, we've got examples of, well, this is what we've done in our service, this is how it's led to much better communication with parents and carers, with children and people. Because like Naomi said, this project has led to some really fantastic changes in practice in our service, and they're not massive. It's not, we haven't done anything completely groundbreaking or anything that isn't manageable. Things such as on our consent forms, we ask for consent for children and young people. That's not a big thing. We talk about informed consent when we do our doctoral training, but actually, do we get informed consent when we ask children and young people to be involved? Do we even ask them, or do we just ask their parents and carers? And if we're asking them if they want to be involved in our service, are we giving them enough information for them to make an informed decision about that? And that's when, I know Naomi talked about it previously on the podcast about one-page profiles. Everyone in our service has a one-page profile. Before we even meet a child or young person, we ask that that is shown to that child or young person and for them to agree whether or not they'd like to meet with us. Now, when we think about children who are nonverbal or might struggle to understand that, it doesn't quite fit and we're not there with everything. Sometimes I've just got my earliest one is just a picture of me, so the child has seen a picture of me before I come in. But those little things of just when we send a request for involvement form to a school for them to fill in, that we send our one-page profile, or I have laminated copies actually that in planning meetings I hand out to my school, so it might already be in their school, in their SEN room, it might be on their school's website as well. We're doing that. Sometimes our parent carer leaflets are on the school's website. So just these tiny little things, and like Naomi said, asking them when's a good time to work with them, do they want to work with us. I have a big bugbear about observations, about sitting in the back of a high school and watching a 15-year-old. I don't want to be watched. I don't want someone sitting and watching me, and yet we're doing this to young people. So, and they might want to be watched. That's fine. If they want us to do an observation, if they think that would be helpful to inform our decisions, to inform their decisions, that's fine. But I guess it's trying to think slightly differently around how we practice, giving lots of dates, about doing home visits. I've always done lots of home visits anyway, but sometimes young people don't want to meet with us in school. They want us to come and meet with them at home or a local library or online. And that's actually one of the many positives about the pandemic. It has changed our thinking and our way of working. So we can do a phone call, we can text message, we can meet on Skype or Teams and think slightly differently. And then it's that the process after that, how we make sure that we involve children and young people in outcome setting. You know, it might be that we have an initial consultation where we've gathered some ideas around outcomes, but actually then when we meet with that child or that young person, going through with easy outcomes that you want to be working on, what support would you like? I know we do lots of that anyway within our practice, but it's just making sure we have that thread of that young person throwing through. And even going back to our statutory advices, you know, when we're setting those long-term outcomes within our statutory advices, are those the outcomes that that child wants? I've written some really funky outcomes before because that's what the young person wants, and that's absolutely fine. It's our job to make sure that we change how we work so that they feel able to listen and to share what they want. I have a big bugbear about EPs saying that we advocate for children and young people. I do not want to advocate for children and young people. I want to change processes and systems so that they are able to advocate for themselves.
I loved the points you raised there about how with the project, actually, some of the outcomes weren't radical shifts in practice, but that doesn't make them any less important. And also how you said with some of the changes, you're still working on them. I think that
massively.
Was really... Yeah, I think that was really honest and hopefully should be good news to people listening, to educational practitioners listening, be them educational psychologists or teachers, teaching assistants, to help them realise that with this type of work and promoting this type of work, we're not saying you need to be perfect, you need to be excellent. I loved hearing that. Mentioned at the beginning that you had an opportunity to begin the project in that the service had been dissolved, was the word you used, so you were rebuilding it from the start. If we have listeners who are working in a service that hasn't been dissolved, I guess I'm kind of thinking more educational psychology services here, but it could be any service, couldn't it? And they're not starting with a blank canvas, what advice would you give them?
Well, interestingly, Ali, the service I work in at the moment, they are all up and running. It's a very big service covering a vast area. And so I have gone with this experience of what co-production can look like. And I have found that it's not always possible to kind of go in straight away kind of with all these ideas, and actually maybe it's about the small wins and starting the conversation and reviewing practice, and that's something I am starting within my own service. So we are over the rest of the academic year going to look to do an audit of our practice and start to think how we can build it up. When I first joined there, I started with the one-page profiles because that's a bit of a quick win. And there was things that I could take from the research that I can do on an individual level. So things like not dressing very smartly. And so there's the little quick wins we can take from the research for individual practice. But myself and Erica did a bit of research before this main project. And from that, we talked about the need for kind of a co-production culture. And I think that only happens as we start those conversations and we build that awareness and we have those open and honest conversations, because it is challenging and it is really hard work, and it takes a lot of investment and effort. But actually, and it will take time. It'll take time to get everybody working from the same perspectives to move forward. But what I would say is there are things that you could take from our research to try and adapt your individual practice. But then that was also one of the reasons in the book chapter that we kind of included a bit of an audit to try and start those conversations in your own setting, whether that be an EP service or a school, to think about what are you doing to try and provide those platforms for children and young people to give their ideas and be involved in decision making. So I would say don't be disheartened. There's plenty of places to start.
I think what Naomi's saying is brilliant, and like what you've said, Ali, it's about those small wins, those little things that we can start to think about now. I do think it was easier doing it in a service starting from the beginning, definitely having worked in a well-established service and trying to change practice. And also I would say within our service, we have a fantastic team. I know all EPs are fantastic and all the EP services are fantastic, but our team are up for anything. I think what I would also say as well with this type of work is it's incredibly individualised. So the children and young people who are in the local authority where I work will be very different from other local authorities who will have other issues and other things that they want to bring forward. And if you know, EPs are starting to want to get into this type of work, you need to find your young people in your local authority, because they might not like one-page profiles. They might not think of consent forms or how we dress, or they might have a whole different way of thinking. So it's about trying to build up those relationships and tapping in. And like Naomi was saying before, you know, I meet with our youth council regularly, once or twice a term. We are really lucky, they're fantastic, and we've tried to develop systems whereby we have links with young people. We've also just employed a young person with SEND as well within our local authority, and that's come from some of this work as well, and how they link with different services, because it's all interconnected. But yes, starting with finding your young people where you work and having those conversations, and letting them say, do they even want to have those conversations? Because they might not.
I think that's such a wonderful point about how sometimes when we begin to develop these conversations around practice, it can, just by the nature of how practice gets disseminated, turn into a tick box activity, such as, what is co-production? Oh, well, one-page profile, or do this. And I love your point there, that it's not actually the actions, it's the orientation. That seems so critical to me. Okay, let's have a conversation around language, another one. Because the question I've been asking interviewees for the podcast is, what does meaningful voice practices mean to you? Because this is a term that's kind of used throughout the book. And obviously, if you have a quick look at the literature, you will see it dominates currently. There is pupil voice, we have student voice in higher education, there's parent voice, and these are the terms that are used. However, you guys did your research on co-production and have some really interesting points to make. So rather than me asking, what does that term mean to you, what terms do you use and why?
When I started this journey, I'm going back years and years, we started, obviously, we were using voice of the child, and that was very popular, and that is a great term and helpful of its time. But through this and working with children and young people, they quite often don't like it, or they express that they don't like it, because it's not about the voice, it's about the so what. What are you going to do with my voice? And that's why I guess terms such as co-production are coming out so strongly, because it's about the so what. How is it feeding within that process? You know, we're talking about children and young people here, but I'm also really keen on parents and carers and their voice and how they co-produce, because I noticed, Ali, sorry, I'm picking up language here, you talked about parents, and I never just use the word parents, it's always parents. I'm a real stick.
Very true.
That, because we've got so many children who are in care, so it's about how we make sure that our language really reflects that. But like I said, there is no perfect, and probably in 5 years I'll be changing my language again, because it's what young people want. So, and even the terms children, young people, on our reports, we quite often change whether they want to be perceived as a child, whether they're happy with a child, whether they want a young person put in there as well. And that being about really tailored to that child. But yeah, I think language, we actually had a team meeting this week about the word difficulty and how maybe we shouldn't be using this word difficulty anymore. We should be using the word difference, and how we need to start or stop thinking in terms of necessarily strengths and needs, because we're placing a judgment call on that. And actually, how do we go into more descriptors and describing different types of differences and the impact that the child perceives on that or those around them? So, Ali, once you start this work, you get into rabbit holes. You get deeper and deeper thinking, am I using the right language? Am I saying the right thing? What do young people think? And one person will have a particular view on one thing that is very different. And that's what's so hard about this work, because we're trying to generalise to develop and shape our practice, but it might not be right just because it worked one way. And I think a really good example, actually, that's come from the work was that lots of children and young people said that they didn't like that referrals come through schools. They wanted us to be more accessible, And one of the ways we've done this is we have an email address that young people can contact. We have mobiles, you can text us, and they wanted workshops as well. So we've set up children and young people workshops on particular topic areas that young people said that were important to them. And nobody has come to any of our workshops. And that is absolutely fine because it doesn't work. So even if it said something that they thought might be helpful for them, we've trialled it, it hasn't worked, that's absolutely fine.
Interesting, Ali, when you asked us about language, and the first thought that came to my mind is Erica and I sit here and in our research, and when we have this conversation, we're talking about co-production. And even practitioners that I speak with on a daily basis say, well, but what's that? And the term itself is very unhelpful. but it's a way to start a conversation, hopefully. But then how do you explain that to a child or young person? Because if I said co-production, they would probably look at me like I had five heads. And so we do have to think about the terminology. And it also reminded me, Erica, I don't know if you remember, but it's part of the research. We asked children and young people what an ideal EP would be like. And they said they wouldn't be called an educational psychologist.
Oh, really? What did they say?
Well, they said that the term was scary. The term psychologist was scary, which quite rightly it is. But then that also highlights this, I suppose, the underpinning concepts around co-production, because it's a title that we can't move away from as such. And so that's the compromise. We have to then think, well, they don't like that term, or the young people we work with didn't like that term, but what can we do to make us more accessible? So how do we explain what that actually means, rather than maybe their preconceived ideas of what that means? And so I think you're right, we have to be really careful about kind of the language. And I liked really that you had the term meaningful voices, because that made me think, what does that mean, meaningful voice? And I think the conversations Erica and I always come back to is this idea that the so what, the acting on whatever the opinion is, but also the sustainability of that over time, that assess, plan, do, review, and coming back and reviewing, and it not being that tick box exercise. We've not asked them once and that's it forever, because we all change our mind.
And thank you for picking up on that, because I essentially use the first chapter in the book to try and coin my own term for the rest of the book, and it was one of the reasons I wanted to have you as contributors with your research project on co-production, because it aligned with what I was trying to set up with the word meaningful, which is it's not just listening, it's got to lead to something, and that something is action. And that's where I tried to position the idea of something being meaningful. So if you were to go into a school and they wanted to engage in co-production, and if they were to do it well, what would that look like, and what would the staff be doing?
I'm sure Erica might be able to offer some insight in it in a minute, because I think she's been doing some work around this.
Brilliant.
But it was interesting, and I think another reason we wanted to contribute to the book is because Erica and myself had thought about co-production within education, because they have such a huge impact on children's kind of development and their thoughts, their ideas as they grow up. But for me, I feel it's about a school or educational practitioners taking a step back and thinking about all their children in their setting. So often schools will have school councils, and they'll have other ways in which children and young people share their ideas or give their opinions. But I think something we really try to grapple with is how do we involve all children and young people to be able to share their ideas? How do they want to do that? What approaches can we take to support them? And how can we include those who maybe don't shout the loudest and aren't as vocal with their ideas to contribute? So I think for me, it would, that educational practitioners would need to be reflexive in thinking about that and the opportunities they're giving. And I'm sure if practitioners are buying your book, they will be kind of on the right road already because they're thinking about it. So there was just some thoughts that I had, because I think we can't really say what it would look like as such, because it would be different in every setting, depending on the children, depending on the staff, and depending on the resources that are available, because it can't be prescriptive as such. But that's why we hope that there's kind of prompts you can take from the book chapter to make you stop and think how this work might apply in your own setting.
Yeah, just to build on that, unfortunately, no setting has ever said to me, I want to develop co-production, because I think if they did, I'd be, yeah, we'd be halfway there because they'd be interested in it. Mm. What has happened, though, is when schools have come to me with an area of need that they want to develop, which does happen a lot when we do systemic work as EPs, is the first thing we always talk about is what would your children and young people like? How can we get them involved in this process? Because what we've tend to find, and everyone does it, different organisations do it, and it can be useful, but we tend to come up with an idea first and then we go to children and people. What do you think of this idea? What would you like? What don't you like? Whereas that is not co-production, because that not be the idea of what those children and young people want or what is important to them. I do have to say the new this workshop that we're delivering this term for in our service for schools that is about listening to children and young people and co-production hasn't come from schools, that came from our youth council who did a big event, I think in the autumn term. They invited all schools, they had all strategic leads there, and lots of local authorities do events like this, and it was about how do we move forward and how can we work together. And from that, young people saying, let's do some workshops for schools on this about how we can work together and be involved. And it's not just about getting the youth, the school council, involved, because they're quite often, and it's great that you've got that in place, but it's those young people who are good at talking, good at expressing themselves, might be head girl, head boy, that's great. But like Naomi was saying, that's not necessarily the children and young people who want to engage, because they're already engaging in the system. It's those who aren't engaging in the system that we need to capture their views and get them motivated and want to be involved in developing and changing systems. So I think, like Naomi said, it can look so different in different places. And it's hard as well, I find, because sometimes when I do have these conversations with school, it can be quite frustrating for them. Hopefully it's not just because I'm a frustrating practitioner, but when they say we want to do this, well, hold on, do children and young people even want that? Oh. And then we have to go back, and then they go, I haven't got time to create something right from the beginning. This is what I've got to do. And then I guess I think, well, how could we involve them at that point? If you've got to do this, because it's always a compromise, isn't it? And it's a power share. Sometimes with co-production, we can fall into the trap of letting children and young people lead everything and dictate. And that is not co-production. It's about us working together with what's feasible and realistic, and in a way that shares power. It's got to be two ways, and I guess that's part of, if schools want to do it, it's thinking about that as well.
The final question I have for you is, what is there to be hopeful about because of educational professionals wishing to develop co-production?
It is about the fact that they are listening to this podcast, that they have picked up the book.
Fingers crossed.
That's the start of the journey, to have that moment where you think, oh, maybe I'm not doing as well as I could do in this area. Maybe I'm not speaking to children and young people in a way that allows them to be more involved in decision making. Because it is very uncomfortable, and I know we've talked about that, and I think that's why people are perhaps a little bit frightened or feel that it's unmanageable because of the investment it takes. And so I think it's very easy to kind of shy away from co-production and think, well, I've asked and I've done my bit, but actually not to take those further steps of kind of putting things in place, the so what, the sustainability aspect of kind of reviewing and going back to children and young people. And so for me, the fact that people are brave enough to sit and question their own practice, I think is a really big first step. And it also makes me a little bit excited because I still feel uncomfortable about it after all of this. And I still face challenges in practice and, well, just in all aspects of life when I think about how we promote or provide platforms for everyone to be involved in what we're talking about or what we are doing. It is difficult, but it makes me excited of the moments that are to come for those practitioners, that if they are brave and they delve into this even just a little bit, it can change how you see the world completely. Because even in 10 years time, I'll remember some of the conversations that Erica and I had with those children and young people at the very beginning of my journey. And I still feel at the very beginning of my journey, but I feel that it is, just exciting that can happen for everybody if they're brave enough to kind of open that door and kind of dive in, if you will.
Great. And Erica?
Yeah, I think Naomi's said that really well. It's about sitting with uncertainty and that being okay to sit with. I guess the only thing I'd add is every time I ask children, young people about what I'm doing or what could make it better or get them involved in shaping things, it's better. I've never been let down. And I think people are terrified sometimes that if I ask a young person if they want to work with me explicitly, they're going to say no. And then I won't get my statutory advice written in time. So I think there's lots of concerns that come through sometimes that if we open ourselves up to this type of work, we're going to have this floodgate of different ways of working that we can't manage and it's difficult. And I guess what I find hopeful is it never is. It never makes things more difficult or harder, or we might have to change things slightly, but it always makes our service better. And that's the power of children and young people, because they are incredible. So that's brilliant.
You've both done a wonderful job today of modelling how it's not a bolt-on, it's an orientation that leads to reflective practice. So therefore is embedded across absolutely every aspect of practice, be that if you're a teacher, ed psych, whatever. Thank you so much to Naomi and Erica for being great guests today. We hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode, and if you have enjoyed yourself, please consider reading our book of the same title, Diverse Voices in Educational Practice, published October 31st, 2022 by Speechmark Routledge. Available in all good bookshops. I've always wanted to say that. Goodbye.